Welcome to The Man for Texas, Episode 2, Comancheros in Exile. I'm Brandon Seal. Jose Francisco and his fellow Tejano refugees had seen hundreds of their comrades fall on the Medina battlefield. They'd heard the volleys from the battlefield firing squads, and perhaps even the screams of the prisoners being slaughtered and dismembered by Arredondo's men as they fled from the field of action. At least half of their 1,400 or so companions, who marched out with them that morning of August 18, 1813, had perished in the shifting sands of the Encinal de Medina, maybe more. And yet, even with that context, they had no reason to anticipate the extent to which Spanish General Joaquin de Arredondo would extend his vengeance to the people of San Antonio. His executions continued even well after he occupied the town. Hundreds of men had been thrown into the priest quarters of San Fernando, 18 suffocated. 40 more were pulled aside and marked for execution every third day. Chain gangs for some, death squads for still others. The women were shown no mercy either. 500 San Antonio women were thrown into an old stone storehouse called La Quinta and forced to grind corn 20 hours a day. And, of course, subjected to the unspeakable other things that happen to civilian populations, particularly women, in times of war. Many Tejano refugees and some of their families had followed Jose Francisco de Goliad, which actually wasn't called Goliad in 1813. It was still called La Bahia, or the Bay. It wouldn't be renamed Goliad for another 16 years, and then as an anagram of the name of the priest Hidalgo who had started this whole thing. A few days after the battle, though, Angel Navarro arrived, Luis's cousin, and a lieutenant in the Royalist Army during the Battle of Medina. But he'd been thrown out of the army and sent into exile by Arredondo once the extent of his family's involvement with the Republican cause had become clear. Angel Navarro's case highlighted how muddled and confused the whole episode had been. Ruiz's neighbor, brother-in-law, and compadre, Juan Ignacio Perez, had been a decorated royalist captain during the battle. Had Ruiz seen him across the field of battle? Had Perez been among the royalist cavalry who had foiled Ruiz's two attempts to flank the royalist army and get at Arredondo in the rear? It had been so close. Everyone agreed that a Republican victory was just moments away. Jose Francisco didn't know it, but his royalist compadre, Perez, was actually on his trail at exactly that moment. Jose Francisco Ruiz would be a particular target of Spanish royalist vengeance, even after Mexico won its independence. Most Spanish officers would never forgive him for the role he'd played in the execution of the defeated Spanish commanders after the Battle of Rosillo.
The local commanders are put on trial. They're convicted of treason against the revolution, and they're marched out of town, and their throats are cut, and they're executed. And Ruiz is clearly implicated as a leader in that effort. And so this is one of those events that's hotly debated, both at the time and now among historians, about the various roles, what was going on. I think from the Tejano perspective, it's important to understand that Salcedo and Herrera, who's the presidial commander and the local governor, had participated in the execution of Miguel Hidalgo, who's the leader of the 1810 Mexican uprising. That's why they were put on trial for treason against Hidalgo, and they were executed.
The Spanish officers were denied priests and denied burial, making it a particularly gruesome execution and a particularly unholy, unpardonable act in the Catholic tradition.
An understanding of Tejano worldview and its basis in Catholicism is one aspect that's kind of not well explored by a lot of historians, but they're central in understanding some of the actions taking place and specifically some of the military traditions. We look at Medina, for example, where Republicans are denied burial, you know, they're left out on the field. That very much is an additional punishment, if you will, to try to deny them an afterlife. You see that where Santa Anna burns the defenders of the Alamo. Similarly, the idea is that the body has to be preserved for the resurrection. And so by burning them, he's essentially condemning them to hell.
But another element of that Catholic legacy is the institution of compadrazgo, as in the relationship of Jose Francisco Ruiz with Juan Ignacio Perez, the San Antonio royalist captain on his trail now.
the dynamic between Ruiz and Perez is one of the most fascinating aspects of Ruiz's life, and one that kind of illustrates the importance of an institution that we call a compadrazgo, or compadre relationship.
And compadrazgo is a commitment as serious as that of being a parent, particularly at a time when people didn't live as long.
So the fact that Ruiz's compadre was the one who was sent to capture him, I think, most certainly had an influence in Perez's lack of success.
And it also probably protected his wife and children back home in Ruiz's absence.
That while the women of San Antonio were corralled in the Quinta, exposed to daily abuses by the army, the Ruiz and Navarro women were not. Also, Ruiz also does not appear on the confiscation rolls. Clearly, Perez, who was appointed commander, is shielding his compadre. And what makes it especially very compelling as well is that the roles get reversed in the 1836 revolution, where Perez maintains his loyalty to Mexico, and Ruiz is an active participant in the revolution. And Perez has to flee. He flees into Mexico following the revolution. And Ruiz, as a compadre, similarly protects his assets, tries to protect his family, and does so until his death.
Notwithstanding these deep family ties, Perez and the larger Spanish pursuit force still followed Tejano refugees all the way to the Trinity River. There, Perez and the Royalist cavalry force that he was a part of caught up to several hundred frantic Tejano refugees. The commanding Royalist officer ordered the unit to open fire, killing something like 75 of the refugees on the west bank of the Trinity River. Another 100 or so they captured and marched back to San Antonio for later execution and for the horrors of La Quinta. But Ruiz and his band made it across the Trinity and onto an old farm that his brother had owned in Louisiana. For the next decade, Natchitoches, Louisiana, and its environs would become home to what was left of Texas's first independence movement. Ruiz and the Tejano refugees would become smugglers, Indian traders, comancheros, in order to survive. But not just survive, they would arm the native peoples of Texas and help them wage a proxy war against their old Spanish enemies. On the next episode of The Man for Texas. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Art Martinez de Vara for joining us on this episode, and go check out his book about José Francisco Ruiz called Tejano Patriot. You should also go buy the audiobook, read by me, under the same name, Tejano Patriot, and available wherever you buy your audiobooks. For more information about Art and his projects, go check out artmartinezdevara.com. And for more information on my projects and past podcasts, you can go to brandonseal.com. Don't forget to drop in here the ending about check out the book and websites, da da da.